Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Tampa Bay flying across the country and dropping 55 on the Rams. Are you kidding? That to me, and I've seen some weird things in the NFL so far at the quarter point, that was the strangest thing I've seen so far. A double nickel from the Bucks on the Rams. Remember, that was a team that blew an 18-point lead to the Giants at home last week. Then they go into the house of the defending NFC champs, and they go for 55. Jared Goff throws for 517 yards, and he loses. And that's because Shaq Barrett is a monster. If you do not know about Shaq Barrett, you better ask somebody, because he had his ninth sack of the season to go along with an INT and a forced fumble, and it iced the game. Pretty shocking. But I'll tell you what's not shocking. Gardner Minshew the second doing Gardner Minshew the second things. How about Beowulf? Beowulf goes into Denver, and he does this.
Dropping is Gardner to throw. Looking, still looking. Scrambles to his right. Now he's going to run it up forward. Still stays on his feet. Still looking. Now he fires into the end zone. He wants Rock Armstead in the back of the end zone. That's going to be a touchdown. Gardner Minshew, the magic man, got it to the rookie for the score.
Uncle Rico never made a play like that.
Wild play. Thanks to Jags Radio. Awesome play. So Bayo did that. And then Beowulf did this.
Pump fake, they throw to the middle of the field. That ball is caught. Linden for the end zone. And James O'Shaughnessy, touchdown. Minshew to O'Shaughnessy. And Jacksonville has taken the lead.
And that's not all. Then he caps off the day by leading an 8-play, 60-yard drive in about a minute and a half for the game-winning field goal. Like, I should be shocked by a rookie quarterback who was a backup a few weeks back going on the road and leading a game-winning drive like that, but I'm not. I'm not. Not when that guy's name is Gardner Minshew II, and it could have been Beowulf Minshew, son of Flint Minshew. You know what else is not surprising? Do you know what else was not surprising? Vontaze Burfict doing this.
Empty set for Brissett. Backs to throw. He has time. Close to the right side. Upfield. Throws. It's caught by Jack Doyle. First down. Up the field. A late flag in the secondary. Doyle has a first down, but all kinds of flags are coming out now.
And Burfict's always been a head case. He was a head case when he was in Cincinnati. And it just continues here in Oakland.
Colts Radio. And that may have been the most Vontaze Burfict thing ever. Probably the most single Vontaze Burfict thing I've ever seen, and that's saying something. So immediately, everybody expects a suspension, except for John Gruden, who seemingly was losing his mind over it. Like, how do you do that to that guy? Like, Gruden was the only one who didn't understand. So, shocking thing of all shocking things, the suspension comes quickly, and it's for the rest of the season. That was the question, right? There's going to be a suspension. We knew that. But how long was it going to be? Now we have our answer. The rest of the season. Good. I've got a quick follow-up to that, too. Why is Vontaze Burfict even still in that league? Why is this guy still allowed to play at all? He's been suspended multiple times for hits. He was fined $165,000 for hits last year alone. Here's a quick list of the names involved. Martellus Bennett, LeGarrette Blount, Antonio Brown, Jack Doyle, Cam Newton, Roosevelt Nix, Anthony Sherman, Greg Olsen, Max Williams. Like I've said it before, that's not a football roster. That's a list of guys that Burfict has cheap-shotted. It's gotten so long, it's now in alphabetical order. And it's probably not even a complete list. So in an era of player safety, Vontaze Burfict is the league's most unsafe player. This guy literally is a threat to everybody around him. So let me ask you once again, how is this guy even still in the league? And if Burfict doing that was predictably bad news, and it was, here is some predictably good news. Frank Gore, the legend, rushing for 109 yards against the Pats yesterday to become just the fourth player in NFL history to crack 15,000 yards rushing, which is awesome. It's awesome, and it's awe-inspiring. It's incredible. And his latest 100-yard rushing game came against arguably the best defense in the league, the Patriots, in a game that the Bills wanted so badly and came so close to getting. And they nearly had it. Bills Mafia, you nearly had it despite the fact that you lost Josh Allen to this.
Now finally the snap. Allen looks to throw. Pressure. Jumps up, going to run with it. Josh on the run. Oh, he gets banked hard as he gets close to the first down. Sticks at the 38-yard line, and the flag goes down. There is concern for Josh Allen. John Feliciano calling the trainers and doctors to come out. He went down hard. He took a hit up high. Maybe Jonathan Jones who drilled him up high as he was going down. That's the risk that comes, right, when you're running the football. Josh Allen there helping him, trying to help him to his to sit up a little bit. He is down at the 38-yard line.
Bills Radio. Holy crap. Did Vontaze Burfict throw on a Pats jersey for that play? Nope. That was Jonathan Jones. And the better question is, how was Jones not ejected for that? I mean, not to be this guy, although Micah Hyde of the Bills did pose the question, and he's right. Can you imagine if a Bills player did that to Tom Brady? You think that Bills player, whoever it is, would still be on the field? No chance. And you would have thought the Bills would have had no chance in a game against the Pats where Allen threw three picks and they had a punt blocked and returned for a TD. You'd figure in a game like that they had no chance, but they did. They were still in this thing and they had a chance because this Bills team is different. This Bills team is mentally tough and they're good. And despite all that, they still had a chance to drive for what would have been one of the great September wins in team history. One of the great September wins in any team's history. And they had it all set up. They were right there with a look at it until this happened.
Here's the snap. Barkley. This pass is tipped high into the air, and it's an easy interception for New England. It is Collins who comes up with it, and he goes out of bounds at the New England bench. At about midfield. An easy pick for Jamie Collins. The pass tipped at the line of scrimmage. Bills cannot stop it with a minute 27 left, and that should do it.
I'll say it for you, Bills fans. I will say it for you. That sucks. It would have been amazing. It would have been so incredible to win that game on that drive. And I can only imagine what that party would have been like. If Bills fans were practically tearing down goalposts and walking them through town and talking Super Bowl at 3-0 after a tough win over the hapless Bengals. Can you imagine what they would have been like at 4-0 with a win over the dynastic Patriots? And can you imagine what it would have been like if the Bills beat the Pats and the Lions beat the Chiefs? I can imagine it. I was preparing for it because both those things nearly did happen. But if they did, how hideous would that have been? I'm pretty sure the world would have completely imploded. I'm pretty sure the entire world would have swallowed itself because it nearly did happen because Detroit jumped out on KC 10-0 and then fell behind in the second half when this happened.
It will give him forward motion of about a half yard. Tyrann Mathieu, now the Chiefs pull the ball out, but the play, has it been blown dead?
It has.
I don't know. The Chiefs are running the other way with the football. Walt Anderson is letting Breshad Breeland. They're letting Breshad Breeland go all the way for 99 yards and a fumble return for a touchdown defensively. Walt Anderson let the play go.
Chiefs Radio, how many times have you seen that? How many times have you seen a guy pick up the ball and just run until he turns around and runs back? This is why they tell those guys, just do it. Because on the off chance, it's not blown dead. And it wasn't. So when you see that, what do you think? If you're a Lions fan especially, when you see that, you think, oh no. Oh no. Don't do this again. Don't do it to the fans again. Except the Lions, like the Bills, are not the same. Because then they fought back. And they retook the lead. 30-27. With just over 2 minutes to go. And they were causing lots of problems for Patrick Mahomes. They were double-teaming Travis Kelce. They were making life hard for Sammy Watkins. They were not the same Lions, and they were physical, too. So all of a sudden, Mahomes had to find a way to get this done with his feet, including that now iconic run with the look back at the ref. And then on the game-winning drive, he runs for 15 on 4th-and-8, which was soul-snatching for the Lions fans. And then Darrell Williams caps it off with a one-yard run. What I'm saying is, I don't know that there is such a thing as a good loss, but if there is such a thing as a good loss, that was it, Lions fans. Because a win were to knock the earth off its axis. The Lions beating the Chiefs to remain undefeated would have been unreal. And if the Lions beat the Chiefs to remain undefeated, the same day the Bills beat the Pats to remain undefeated, man, the whole solar system would have ripped apart. Again, I don't want to say either loss is a good loss, but they're both pretty impressive. And for the rest of us, at least the earth is still spinning today. Athletic Greens Ultimate Daily is the obsessively researched all-in-one nutritional support powder containing 75 vitamins, minerals, and whole food ingredients. Just one scoop contains essential prebiotics, probiotics, digestive enzymes, and more, all of which support your gut health, energy levels, and immune system. And it's easy. Every morning before breakfast, I mix in a scoop and 10 ounces of water, and I get a jump start on feeling my very best for the entire day. On the road or away from home, the travel packs make it especially simple to keep up your healthy routine because there's no need to carry around multiple pill bottles. Simply put, Athletic Greens can help you feel great every single day, no matter what life throws at you. So start every day by squaring away your nutritional needs so you're ready for whatever comes your way. If you struggle to get in nutrient-dense fruit and veggies, or you just don't feel as good as you used to, then Athletic Greens is here to help. And right now, you can jump on over to athleticgreens.com/Rome and claim my special offer, 20 free travel packs valued at $79 with your first purchase. That's athleticgreens.com/Rome. Athletic Greens, it's amazing. Start your day right, good things follow. athleticgreens.com/Rome. Ross Tucker, NFL. Ross, my man, what's going on? How are you?
Jim, I'm fantastic, man. Thanks for having me, as always.
Always good to have you. Always look forward to it, too. Ross, if I had told you before yesterday that Tampa Bay would go on the road to Los Angeles and drop 55 on the defending NFC champs, what would you have said?
No freaking way. I mean, I thought the number was way too much. I told people on the Even Money podcast to take the Bucks getting the 10 points. I thought they had a chance to keep it close, maybe even win the game, but not 55 points. I mean, Jim, think about the fact that they only gave up 13 points on the road Sunday night to Baker Mayfield, Odell Beckham Jr., Jarvis Landry, Nick Chubb, the same team that scored 40 points against the Ravens yesterday, only had 13 against this same LA Rams defense. And yet for them to go out there and do that, it was really, really surprising and impressive.
Now, I thought, Ross, I said right before you came on, that's the most amazing thing I've seen all season long. In a year of some really weird things, there's nothing like that. Now, you made the point that Shaq Barrett would get your vote for Defensive Player of the Year. What do you make of what he's done through the first month, and what impresses you the most about him?
Well, what I make from it is I wish I was him, man. I mean, he's on a one-year deal. They're going to either have to pay him an ungodly amount or they're going to franchise tag him. It's kind of crazy. Now, I know the Broncos got 5 sacks yesterday, but it's kind of crazy that they chose to go with Von Miller and Bradley Chubb over Barrett. I can live with that, I guess. But that they had him, and now he's in Tampa, and I don't think he would get the Defensive Player of the Year votes right now, just because their defense is not as good as the Bears' defense. They're not playing in primetime games. He doesn't have the name brand recognition of Khalil Mack. So I think that the writers, the voters, would probably vote for Khalil Mack right now. But 9 sacks, all the forced fumbles, the big interception yesterday. I mean, he had the interception, and he had the game-clinching fumble that Sue picked up and ran in for a touchdown. It's crazy what he's been able to do on a bad defense that's really been behind in a lot of the games. Not even like he's been playing with a lead in these 4 games that much.
We're talking to Ross Tucker. Now, Ross, you mentioned Khalil Mack, so let's go there for a minute. He had another Khalil Mack-type day, another strip sack, play where he was double-teamed and held, and he still brings down Kirk Cousins. You know, Khalil Mack doing Khalil Mack things. Ross, take me back to your playing days. As an offensive lineman, if you were facing a guy like Khalil Mack on Sunday, what was the week of preparation like, and how anxious and stressed out would you be knowing you had to face a guy like that?
Well, a couple things. One is, I remember one time we were playing the Ravens, and it wasn't pass rushing because I was playing center and Ray Lewis was playing linebacker. And I distinctly remember, Jim, thinking, you know, because one of the guys on the line said, you know, Tuck, you got to block Ray almost every play this game. And I said, yep, I'm going to kill him. I'm going to make a name for myself. It's going to be awesome. That is not what happened in the game. Unfortunately, I barely blocked him once. And so I learned a lesson right there that maybe I was a little overeager, a little too confident. When you're going against a pass rusher, though, what you're really doing is talking to the other line mates and talking to the coaches about trying to get help and trying to make sure that they don't put you on an island with a monster like that the entire game. That's the thing that was so impressive, by the way, about Mac. I mean, there were a couple times, Jim, where they were sliding to him, which means it's really two for one. It's really the offensive tackle has his outside number, the guard has his inside number, and he still split them and made plays. That should never, ever, ever happen. I don't care who you are. I don't care how good you are. You should never be able to beat a double team like that. So that's one where I can remember a couple times in my career that even if it wasn't called, we had an understanding amongst the guys up front that we were going to help whoever had to block, whoever that guy was, to make sure he didn't make our buddy look real, real bad.
We're talking to Ross Tucker. I would argue that not only was there a two-for-one and you had a guy sliding over to help, it was a two-for-one and they held, and he still beat that double team as they were holding. Hey, Ross, what about Vontaze Burfict? He gets ejected for that hit on Jack Doyle yesterday. News breaks a few minutes ago. He'll be suspended for the rest of the season. At this point, Ross, could you argue that there should be an argument, or you can make an argument, that he should be banned from the NFL, period, at this point?
Without question. I'm so glad you said that. I actually just filed my column at The Athletic saying exactly that. And I'm not, Jim, you know, some guy that's just a sports writer, reporter, whatever. As you know, I played 7 years. Our mutual buddy Kyle Brandt could tell you from college, or the guys I play with in the NFL could tell you, I was very borderline. I mean, there were things I did on the field that some of the defenders would say was cheap or dirty or whatever. But a lot of times that was just like a cut block downfield that they didn't like. It was still legal. When I saw what Vontaze Burfict did yesterday, he should never be allowed on the field again, ever. That is his 10th transgression, on-field transgression. I'm not going to go through all of them. I would encourage people to Google it or look it up. But he has been fined or suspended 9 times for questionable behavior. I'm not even counting the middle finger or the PEDs, just for questionable hits. The whole idea of discipline, Jim, is to deter behavior. It's not working. He's not deterred. He doesn't care. And how bad would the NFL feel if Jack Doyle had suffered some type of permanent brain damage when Burfict launched himself like a missile? I'm not some prude when it comes to football. You know, I love the physical part of it. I love the violence of football. But at some point, the NFL is culpable and probably legally liable for what this guy does on the field. I mean, if something really bad happened to Jack Doyle, if I were his family, I would sue, and I think they would win. And I'll say one other thing, too, before I forget. He's going to appeal, I saw. The NFLPA better not represent him or support him. Their job, Jim, is to look out for the best interest of all 1,800 players. Not one guy that consistently endangers the health of the other 1,800 because he won't follow the rules. If anything, the NFLPA should be pushing for him to be banned for life as well. I don't ever want to see that dude inside the white lines ever again, because I'm scared of how it could end at some point.
Good for you, Ross. Ross Tucker joining us. I want to ask you one quick follow on that. Ross, if you had to get inside this guy's head, how do you explain this type of thing from Burfict? Does he not know the line? That sounds absurd, but does he not know the line? Does he not care about the line? Or are we just talking about a bad guy?
I think, from what I've heard, I think when he goes inside the white lines, I think he just loses his mind. And we all have kind of an alter ego. We're all different when we're out there than we are normally in regular. But I think he loses all sense of right or wrong. How about as he's running off the field, he's smiling and blowing kisses?
Right.
I mean, is this guy delusional? I hope he realized he was blowing kisses to the rest of his salary for the entire season. I mean, he just doesn't get it. And to try to get in his head is like trying to get into Antonio Brown's head. I wouldn't even begin to know where to start. I just know this. That guy should not be on NFL field ever again. I mean, when is enough enough when it's the 10th time now he will have been fined or suspended? 10.
Ross Tucker joins me for another moment or so. Ross, I had probably a half a dozen other things I wanted to get to you about, but we're already running out of time, so let's get to the really critical stuff. You called the Cincinnati Marshall game in West Virginia on Saturday as the founder of hashtag Tuck Spreads. And as an official reporter on Press Box Food, how was the food at the crew meal and how was the food in the press box?
All right, so the press box food was okay. They had spaghetti and chili. Interesting how many people were putting the chili on top of the spaghetti. I didn't need the spaghetti, so I didn't go there. The chili was good. I think chili is chronically underrated, so I like that. But a couple hours before that, at the CBS Sports Network crew meal, it was the best crew meal I've ever had. They had brisket that melted in your mouth. They had terrific baked beans, which I'm a fan of. Barbecue chicken that like fell apart on your plate. I mean, it was the best crew meal I've ever experienced in 12 years as a broadcaster. And the key was they had five or six different cookies, including soft peanut butter cookies. I love peanut butter cookies, but they have to be soft. I don't understand why anyone ever makes, buys, sells hard cookies. We all agree, Jim, that soft cookies are better than hard cookies. So why do hard cookies even exist? Nobody can explain this to me.
Ross Tucker is my guest. And as an employee of the CBS Sports Network, Ross, I've got to get my ass out of this studio to one of those games because I have never experienced a spread quite like that. Not the way you laid that out. He is the host of the Ross Tucker Football Podcast. He is the co-host of Home and Home. You can follow him for this and other things at Ross Tucker NFL. My man, that was so good, Ross. Great to have you back, and I really appreciate it.
Absolutely, Jim. Not many people go right from banning perfect to life to soft cookies. That's what I'm here for.
Not many. Nobody, Ross. Nobody but you. Nobody can do that. Great job, Ross. I've got five words for you. Scoreboard. Look up at it. No, better yet, how about this? Standings. Look up at them. Because America's team just rolled into Baltimore and put a beating on the Ravens to the tune of 40-25. And well, 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 look who's in first in the AFC North. The Cleveland freaking Browns. America's team. You know, the Cleveland Browns. The crew that most of you wanted to throw in the trash after only 1 week. The same crew that you wanted to dump on again after week three. That crew went into the house of a rival and beat them by 15 and took over the top spot in that division. That was a 10-10 game in the third, and they blew it wide open. That's how you finish on the road. That was a brawl, a one-sided brawl, but a brawl nonetheless. It had everything. Big plays, insane runs, dudes trying to choke each other out on the field. I mean, I have no idea how things got so bad between Odell Beckham and Marlon Humphrey, but I know I never expected to see one guy trying to choke out another guy on national TV. But that's exactly what Humphrey was doing to Beckham. And Freddie Kitchens was pissed. Freddie said, quote, "I saw what you saw. He was getting choked on the ground. They get away with that because it's Odell. I'm going to be on the phone with Al when I get on the bus," end quote. And to his credit, Beckham handled that as only Beckham can handle that.
It's hot out there. You know, we're just competing. I'm just upset I lost my earring.
I'm just upset that I lost my earring. Browns took it all in stride. He took it in stride. They took it in stride. And then they took everything else Baltimore threw at them in stride. You want to take away Beckham? By blanketing him and choking him, you want to erase the best receiver in the game? That's fine. Here's Jarvis Landry going for 8 receptions and 167 yards. Here's Nick Chubb. Well, have you met Nick Chubb? Because this is what Nick Chubb can do.
On first down, takes the ball, gives the ball a cutback by Chubb. He's to the 10. He's still running to the 5. He dips outside left. He's going in. Touchdown. What a run. Nick Chubb.
What a run is right. Browns radio. Hell of a lot of guys had a look at Chubb on that play. None of them could knock him to the ground. So what does Nick Chubb do? He chases that with this.
Mayfield gets motion from one of the tight ends, takes the snap, gives. Chubb runs to the left, bangs it to the outside. He dives for the goal line. Touchdown, Nick Chubb, his second of the day.
To quote a former Raven, that's two for him.
It's two for me. It's two for me.
That's two for Nick. And that made it 24-10. But Baltimore scored to make it 24-18 with just under 10 minutes to go. One play later, Chubb ends the game, and he ends the Ravens by running a stake right through them.
Toss sweep, near side. Here comes Chubb with a cutback. He's out to the 20, 25, 30, 35, 40.
Uh-oh.
Here he goes for the 50. Here goes Chubb. Uh-oh. He's going to go. 20, 15, 10, 5. Touchdown, Nick Chubb. He's got a hat trick.
See ya. Thanks for coming. Nice knowing ya. And after seeing that, I'm guessing a bunch of folks want to get right back on that bandwagon now. A bunch of folks who are taking runs at the quarterback and the head coach are going to act like they never said those things. Act like they never gave up on those two guys. They're going to change their tune after seeing Baker Mayfield go 20 of 30 for 342 yards. Where are the losers now saying how overrated that is? The offense went for 530 yards. So how about you come in here and choke down that Crow Sando, tip your bleeping hat, and show some love and some respect for Freddie Kitchens, who a bunch of you were saying was in way over his head, and that that gig was way too big for him, and they should have never given him that job in the first place. And still others. Others want to say, yeah, well, who cares? So what? The offense is finally doing what everybody expected. Yeah, well, except for one thing. Except that it's not. Because as good as that offense was, they've got another gear. That offense can get even better. There's another level for this group. But even though there is another level, let's just appreciate what we just saw. That was a macho performance. Even Bondo would admit that that was a macho performance. 1-2. There you go. Look how that macho weekend's going. With the Macho Man, the original Macho Man, Bondo. What are you talking about, Rome? I can reset that or not. He knows what I'm talking about. That macho crew on that houseboat knows exactly what I'm talking about. The Macho Weekend.
What's solid? What's macho? Is there a criteria we have to meet?
No criteria. Just wear cutoffs and have some flip-flops. Shirt optional.
This guy Bondo once called me up and invited me to the so-called Macho Weekend, where he and 12 other dudes get on a houseboat and they pay for a cocktail waitress to come in for a few hours and serve them drinks. The Macho Weekend, led by Bondo. Anyway, 1-2 on the season. The Browns were 1-2 on the season, coming off that tough loss to the Rams in Cleveland, facing a ton of heat. That group goes on the road, beats the crap out of a good Baltimore team in Baltimore. And it was not just the offense. The defense had 4 sacks. They had 3 turnovers. They held Lamar Jackson under 250 passing yards for the first time this season. And now they're in first place in the division for the first time in 5 years. If the season ended today, which is absurd because it doesn't, but if the season ended today, they're in the playoffs. You know that whole thing about, yeah, well, the season doesn't end today, so it's a ridiculous argument to make. Yeah, except that so many of you wanted the season to end after one game. So many of you said their season was over after 3 games. So, if the season were to end today, they'd be in the postseason. So don't act like it ended last week. Now, let me just say one more thing. Don't get this part twisted. I'm not saying that they've officially landed. I'm not saying that they have arrived. I'm not even saying that they've completely turned the corner. They're not a finished product. And they still have to face a lot of challenges. I know this. And they know this. But as Freddie Kitchens said in the locker room after the game, this is a bleeping team.
All I want to do is tell you guys this. This is a team.
Damn right.
All right? Offense, defense, special teams. Everybody did your job. Everybody whipped the man in front of you. We ain't done yet. All we've done is win a game on the road. That's it. But it was a division game. All right? And we understand that, too. Now, we got to come back and we got to prepare the way we prepare. All right? Because it does no good unless we build on this. But I think everybody sees what we can be. We got to learn from this one just like we did last week. Hell of a job, kicker. Hell of a job. Come here, man. Give me a hug, man.
Does that sound and look like a guy who's in over his head? America's team was in the building yesterday, and they were wearing white shirts, orange pants, and Baltimore's faces on the bottom of their cleats. In other words, this is a bleeping team. And this is why I did not bleeping jump ship at the first sign of adversity or the second, because it is a bleeping team. This is bleeping America's team.
Cleveland! This is for you!
Say you're walking down the street and you see a $100 bill right there in the street. What are you going to do? Are you going to pick it up or walk right over it? Of course you're going to take the money. So that said, why do you keep picking winners without betting on them? This is why you need to go to MyBookie, because it's fast and it's easy and they pay when you win. Let's face it, where you're betting is just as important as who you're betting on. I wouldn't tell you to bet with them if they were not the best. So be smart about this. If you're going to bet this football season, then bet with MyBookie. Did you know that you could bet on games after they start? Like, if in the second half, it looks like your bet is going to lose, you can always just jump on the other side. I do that. It works. If you're the kind of guy that likes to bet a little bit and win a lot, then try a parlay. If all your picks come through, you'll multiply your winnings. And no matter how you bet, the NFL season is the very best time of year. So join right now. MyBookie will double your first deposit. That is a great deal. Use the promo code Rome and activate the offer today. Promo code Rome. Visit MyBookie.ag today. You play, you win, you get paid. Sonny Dykes. Listen, if you and I, Sonny, were to go back to before Saturday's game, you're coming off a big win at number 25 TCU. It's the kind of win that's going to get some attention, maybe make it hard for guys to focus on the upcoming week. What do you make of how your guys dealt with that success of the TCU win and the way they prepared for South Florida?
Yeah, I was really impressed with our guys. I thought we showed some maturity. We had a really good week of practice. You know, I told him after the TCU game, I thought we'd know more about our team after South Florida than we did TCU, just how we handled everything and starting to get a little attention, that kind of thing. And so our guys came out. We really started the game fast. I think we were up 41-0 at one point and thought our guys really performed at a high level.
Right. The fact that you guys jumped on them 41-0, I think, speaks to the maturity and the focus of the team. The program, Sonny, is ranked in the AP Top 25 for the first time since the NCAA penalty, the rules violations back in 1987. I fully understand that you're focused on the next game, but knowing the pride that SMU fans have, what's it mean to be back in the top 25 once again?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's significant for us. I mean, I, as you said, you're always worried about the next game. You don't worry about rankings. But for our program, it's a big deal. I mean, it's 33 years since we've been ranked. I think that it just shows it's been a long climb back from the death penalty. The great thing about our situation is every single coach that's been hired by SMU since the death penalty has left the program in better shape than he found it. And so, we've got a good program here. We've got, really good facilities. We're in one of the best cities in the country for high school football to find players. We're a university that offers a top education. And so, it's a great place to have a chance to recruit players. We've really taken advantage of the transfer portal. That's been good for us as well. A lot of DFW kids that want to come home and play in front of friends and family. And so we've been able to build our roster through high school players, but also through some transfers.
Sonny Dykes is joining us, SMU head coach. Look, everybody knows how special football is in Texas. You went to high school in Lubbock. You played baseball at Texas Tech. You started coaching in Texas. For those who don't know, though, what makes football in that state so unique and so special?
Well, it's a great tradition. I mean, it's always been a source of pride for communities. There's a lot of small towns in Texas, and I grew up out in West Texas. Kind of the whole Friday Night Lights thing was going on, when I was in high school. And so it's always been a source of pride. If you look at the Dallas suburbs, a lot of these high school programs have some of the best stadiums in the country. They have huge stadiums. They invest in athletics. They understand how important it is, you know, to develop young people, not only in the classroom, but also teach them the lessons that can be taught through football and high school football. And so the state has always invested in athletics and believe it's really important to developing young people.
We're talking to Sonny Dykes. He's the head coach at SMU. Now, Sonny, if we were to go back to last season, you dropped the first three games, but then you went 5-4 the rest of the way, and then you start this season 5-0. When you look at what year two was like at Louisiana Tech and at Cal, how much growth is there from year one to year two?
Yeah, I think if you go back and you look both years, you know, pretty substantial growth. La Tech, I think we jumped from 5 to 8 wins. At Cal, we jumped from one win to 5. And here, you know, I think we're certainly going to improve on our record last year. It's always hard when you walk into some place. I mean, it's hard when you have coaching changes in college athletics. You know, the previous staff recruited players. There was a level of expectations that might have been different. There was a culture that was different. And so, you know, the first year is always tough. You're trying to win the players over, and they're trying to get to know you. You're trying to install a system. But second year usually gets better, and third year historically has been a lot better. So, you know, we feel like that we're a program that's just emerging. You know, we certainly haven't played our best. We're capable of playing a lot better than we have up to this point. And so we're really excited about the long-term future here at SMU.
You know, how do you go about doing that? I mean, to your point that if you go into a program and you didn't recruit these guys and you're trying to change over the culture, how do you go about developing relationships with players that you did not recruit and who did not commit to you?
Well, it all comes down to just relationship building, which is always the most important thing. It's just honesty. It's just trying to get to know the players, being honest with them, you know, setting expectations and then ensuring that the culture can, you know, takes kids in and continues to build them. You know, we have 65 first-year players, and so you have to have a strong culture to be able to bring in 65 new players and for those guys to seamlessly transition the way they have into our program. And so it's a real credit to our players. You know, they've done a great job of working hard and doing everything we ask them to do. You know, we have one of the best strength and conditioning coaches in college athletics in Kaz Kazadi. His staff does a fantastic job of culture building as well. So it's a lot of work, but we're excited about, again, where we are.
Yeah, I want to be very clear about that, Sonny, what you just said. You've got 65 new faces in the program, and we're talking about freshmen, walk-ons, and transfers. That is a gigantic number. Now, you'd been the head coach at Cal, but when that ended, you took an off-the-field job with Gary Patterson in TCU. You had been a really successful head coach, so I think a lot of guys in your shoes might not have been willing to do what you did or might not be willing to do anything other than be a head coach. Why was being with Patterson in TCU something that appealed to you?
Well, I think if you look at, you know, my track record as a head coach, we've been very successful offensively and, quite frankly, hadn't been very good on defense. And so, you know, I wanted to go work for a defensive head coach that I could see his perspective and have a chance to build our defense. I've always believed that championships are won through defense. You know, I'm an air raid guy. I came up through the Hal Mumme, Mike Leach, working with those guys all the way back to Kentucky and Texas Tech. And so we've always been around good defense, but we've always been around good offense, but our defenses have never been quite as good as we wanted them to be. And so I had a year to go with to work for, I think, one of the best defensive coaches in college football, Gary Patterson. And learned a lot from Gary, and I think it's helped us become a much more well-rounded program.
It's one thing to say that you want to get more well-rounded and maybe improve on the defensive side, but it's not just that. As an example, last year during fall camp, you made the point to get very involved in special teams as well. And as you told Chris Vanini, quote, the fact that the head coach is running special teams means this bleep is important, end quote. I like that attitude. All right, so one thing to want to get better at defense. Why was it so important to get that involved in special teams when for a lot of guys it might just be an afterthought?
Well, I think the number one thing that makes you to have a good special teams program is buy-in from your players. And so I think when the head coach is there in the meetings, when the head coach is there, you know, game planning, when the head coach is there talking to kids that play on teams, I think it sends a real clear message about how important it is. And, you know, as a head coach, you get pulled a lot of different ways, but at the end of the day, you know, you have to put your money where your mouth is. And the kids pay attention. They watch, and they know that if you're not in those meetings, then it's probably not that important. And so, you know, it's important for me to be there. You know, we're still trying to get better across our program on offense, defense, and teams. And you know, and like I said, this is a really fun group to coach, Jim. I really enjoyed you know, coaching these guys, and they've done everything that we've asked them to do, and the buy-in on teams has been really good as well.
And then finally, Sonny, it seems to me, even with 65 new faces, from the outside, at least where I'm sitting, it doesn't seem like you or the players are that surprised by the start. For example, nobody's talking about the fact that you're now one win away from bowl eligibility because the goals are so much higher than that. How much confidence did you have in this team even before this season started?
Well, we felt like, you know, we had some depth. You know, with a lot of the transfers, I mean, they've come in and they filled in really well to our program. I think sometimes people assume that they're one-year transfers. We really only have one-year transfer that's come in. It's a grad transfer. A lot of the other guys have been two-year players, three-year players, some kids that are redshirting this year that are going to be four-year players for us. So they've helped us filled in on some recruiting classes, and that's been really important. And so that added depth created competition, and that competition's made everybody in our program better. And for us, you know, getting Shane Bouchel to transfer here from Texas as a grad transfer with 2 years of eligibility, that's been a huge addition to our program. You know, he's played at a very high level, started the game last week, I think 13 for 13 early in the game, and so he's running our offense. He's a kid that's got a lot of experience. He's a fantastic leader. He plays with grit. And so I think he's really made a positive impact on our program.
And finally, Sonny, you mentioned Mike Leach. He obviously was not very happy with what he saw from the past week. I've got a podcast with him coming up this week. There really is nobody quite like him. What was it like to work with him?
You know, it's an awesome experience. I mean, Hal Mumme was the same way. I mean, those guys really changed football. I think if you go back and you look at the way the game was played prior to Hal and Mike and how it's played now, I mean, they've probably changed the game as much as anybody. And so it was a blast, because the one thing about both of them were there was such a great lesson for me is, you know, they didn't necessarily subscribe to a conventional way of thinking. You know, they thought outside the box. They weren't afraid to try something new. They were both very systematic in their approach on how to build an offense and develop players. But they were never afraid to try something different. And I think it's really revolutionized football in a lot of ways.
Yeah, not only that, Sonny, but finally, like, what's it like to see a lot of this taking place on Sundays as well, to see the NFL come down and take as much as they have from college football and implement as much of this offense and some of the schemes that we see that you're running, that some others like you have run? What's it like to see that on Sundays?
Well, I know this. The NFL games are a lot more entertaining now than they used to be. It used to be a lot of just eye formation and power football and kind of the same offenses everybody ran. And now, you know, there's more variety of the offenses. I think it's just a more exciting brand of football, more fun to watch, and certainly I think has, you know, got more attention for me than it has in the past.
And for Bears fans, I've got some really good news, some bad news, and one really weird quote. Let's start with the good news. You beat the Vikings 16-6. Big win. Here's some more good news. You beat the Vikings 16-6, and you did it without Mitch Trubisky. Here's the bad news. You beat the Vikings 16-6, and you did it without Mitch Trubisky. Now, if I told you Bears fans before that game on Sunday that you would lose Trubisky to a shoulder injury on the first possession of the game, most Chicago fans would mark that down as a loss and then move on. Especially when it appeared at that time that it was a really serious injury. The kind of injury that head coach Matt Nagy was anxious about when answering questions about whether or not it might end his season.
I haven't found out a whole lot other than it's his shoulder. So we'll, I'll know more here probably the next day or two, hopefully day, but we'll see how all that goes.
Apparently it's not as bad as all that. Adam Schefter tweeted, quote, "Initial MRI on Bears quarterback Mitchell Trubisky revealed he has a dislocated left shoulder and a slight labrum tear, but does not need surgery and should be back, quote, sooner rather than later," end quote, per source. He will travel with the team to London and is unlikely to play versus the Raiders. Hey, Bears fan, I mean, I don't want to be weird about this, but be honest. What's your reaction when you hear he'll be back sooner than later? Are you happy to hear that or not as happy to hear that? Just be real with me. Be honest. Anyway, if you see that guy go down early in that game and you lose the quarterback that you traded up to get and chose instead of Patrick Mahomes and Deshaun Watson, and you lose that guy to a shoulder injury and it looks bad, I mean, you should lose that game, right? Except they didn't. because Chase Daniel came in and did what was needed to beat the Vikings. 22 of 30, 195 yards, a touchdown, and the win. No, he was not Mahomes. He was not Watson. But the painful question is, was he Trubisky? Because again, and I hate to ask, but Bears fans, you know you're already thinking this. Do they win that game if Trubisky does not get hurt? Nobody is saying that Daniel is a better athlete. Nobody's even saying necessarily that he's a better quarterback than Trubisky. But is he a better fit for the offense? Does he know the offense better than Trubisky? Because it sure seemed like Nagy trusted Daniel more than he trusted Mitch. And how weird is that? Moreover, how weird is it that the offense seems to need to be scaled back for the starter, but it's a little bit more open with the backup? I mean, consider what I just said. How weird is it that it's scaled back at all for your starter? Aren't you supposed to add pages to the playbook and not rip them out for your starter, especially if your starter was selected number two overall? And no, I don't want to hear that when the Bears have the kind of defense that they have, that you could have me win at quarterback. Although you might be right about that, because that was a monster performance by a monster defense. An amazing defense. 6 points allowed in 10 possessions. Dalvin Cook had been destroying everybody in his path until he met the Bears. All of them. Because there was nowhere to run. 14 carries, 35 yards for an upper-tier back. One of the best backs in the game. And you know what's even scarier than the Bears defense doing that? Is the Bears defense doing that without two of their best players. Two dominant players. Akiem Hicks and Roquan Smith. I mean, how do you do that? Well, allow me to introduce John Gruden to a young player by the name of Khalil Mack. Khalil Mack out of the University of Buffalo. I would say maybe you have heard of him, but since you traded him, Chunk, I doubt you have. Anyway, here's what this particular guy can do. First play of the second half, Kirk Cousins drops back and Khalil Mack drops Kirk Cousins.
8 carries, 15 yards in the first half. Cousins loses the football. Strip sack and a takeaway by Chicago. Who else but Khalil Mack forcing that fumble?
This is, I mean, first play of the second half, left tackle against Mack, and he gets low and under, and then the acceleration to the quarterback.
Is it just me, or does Khalil Mack have a strip sack every single game? I mean, now it's just absurd. You know it's coming. You know it's coming. You know that's what he does. You do everything you can to try and stop him, and you still can't. Reggie White had that hump move. Kevin Green had that bull rush. Dwight Freeney had the spin move. Deacon Jones had the head slap. And Khalil Mack has the strip sack. And I know the strip sack is the result of the move and not the move itself, but he does it so much that it's his signature. So from now on, don't even call it a strip sack. Just call it the Khalil Mack. Anytime somebody has a strip sack, call it a Khalil Mack because he owns that. So what do? You send two guys at him and you hold him, and that still doesn't work. Roll it.
Throw down the field, probably in the middle of the field on this one.
His cousin standing in the pocket. Mack got to him. And another marker down as they sack Cousins for a second time. It was Robertson Harris along with Mack. Mack was the one that got contact on first.
It's not fair, Jim. He's too good.
He is too good, and it's not fair. This guy's a monster. The whole Bears defense is monstrous. 6 sacks and nearly no rushing yards on a day when they were missing two of their best players against one of the best backs in the game. And I did mention at the very top that there was a weird quote. Remember that? Well, here is your weird quote. Mr. Strip Sack had the quote, and this one's pretty crazy.
How important was this win and making sure you defended home field today?
A dog that poop fast don't poop for long, man. It's a good division, man. It's going to be a lot of games that we got to win down the stretch, you know what I mean?
Wait, what? I'm sorry? Come again? Did my man just say what I thought that he said? Can we run that back again, please?
A dog that poop fast don't poop for long, man.
Wait, one more time?
A dog that poop fast don't poop for long, man.
A dog that poop fast don't poop for long.
A dog that poop fast don't poop for long, man.
Like, I'm not a veterinarian. What the hell does that even mean? I mean, I guess technically that's accurate, because if the dog don't poop fast, or if the dog do poop fast, then it wouldn't be for long, right?
A dog that poop fast don't poop for long, man.
Wait a minute. All right, so like I went to New York and back, and I wasn't there for even 24 hours, so I might be a little bit slow on the uptake today, but don't you want the dog to, what, like, you mean you'd rather have your dog take a long time? You know what? Never mind. Never mind. And no, Rex, I don't need your take on this. I don't need your help on this, Rex. I'm not going to overanalyze that quote. I'm just going to say right now, this guy is unblockable. He had a monster game. He's rolling. He can say whatever the hell he wants about dogs pooping or humans pooping or anybody else for that matter. I don't
care. A dog that poops fast don't poop for long, man.
I agree, Khalil. A dog that poops fast don't poop for long. You're right about that. You're right. And if you thought that was a hell of a performance, look who they have next. Wait until next week, because the Raiders are coming to town. And if Gruden poop fast, he don't poop for long.
A dog that poop fast don't poop for long, man.
Khalil Mack didn't want to play here.
Uh-huh. And since Gruden doesn't know how good Mack is, or whether or not he wanted to play in Oakland, he's about to find out. Gruden is about to find out who Mack is, because he's going to see him up close on Sunday. And if this guy does this to everybody else who tries to stand in front of him, you can only imagine what he's going to do to the guy and the team that gave up on him when he did not want to leave. If you thought those other dogs poop fast, they're not going to poop for long.
A dog that poop fast don't poop for long, man.
Can't dispute that. You're right about that, Khalil. Memphis is at Louisiana Monroe, Saturday, 3:45 p.m. Eastern. Mike Norvell is their coach. He joins us. Mike, nice to have you back. How are you?
Oh, doing well, Jim. Thanks so much for having me on. You know, I can always always use a little bit of that jungle karma anytime I can get it.
I appreciate you saying that, Mike. Always good to have you on this show. Thanks for making time. So Thursday night, you had a tough one. You were facing Navy, and through the first quarter and a half, they had a 27 lead on you. After that game, Coach Ken said, quote, "They looked tired on defense. We felt like we had them right in our wheelhouse," end quote. That's the point, Mike, where it seems to me a lot of teams facing Navy might crumble, but your guys didn't. What do you make of how your team was playing at that point? And then how much does it say that you were able to turn it around the way you did?
You know, I think it showcases the maturity, the training that we have and kind of embraced within our program. This is a team that anytime you go against Navy, you know that ball control is going to be a critical factor in it. You know, we had some explosive plays there in the first half. You know, offensively and special teams, but you know, they did a really nice job. But I think they had 51 snaps in the first half, and you know, our guys, they had to continue to battle. I thought we did a nice job with continuing to play, you know, playing within ourselves, and then to see the response of our team really in all phases was something that, as a coach, I was really proud of. We showed mental toughness and as well as the physical toughness that's a necessity to try to beat a team like Navy.
And resiliency, and you mentioned the explosive plays, which I'll get to in a minute. It seemed like at one point in the game, Mike, fans were booing quarterback Brady White, but then he goes on to throw for three TDs in the second half. How impressed were you with the way he delivered when it mattered most and the way he kept his head?
It was critical. You know, Brady, like I said, it was a little challenging early to get into a rhythm. We only had 15 snaps in the first half, and there were some mistakes that he had made early. You know, we had a red zone turnover, you know, missed a couple throws, but, you know, he truly stayed within himself and just kept playing the next snap, and we got in the second half, and I thought he responded extremely well, ended up having three touchdown passes that really helped lead us to victory, and, you know, to see a young man, you know, you truly live out what you try to coach him to do, you know, I was really pleased with his performance. defense and proud of his response.
We are talking Memphis football. Mike Norvell is the coach. He joins us. You know, as a head coach, you know there's going to be outside noise, sometimes good noise, sometimes bad noise. How do you go about helping your guys dealing with that noise, making sure it does not get to them or distract them?
Just continue to emphasize, controlling what we can control. And there's always going to be an outside perspective. And like you said, I mean, sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad. And at the end of the day, we always have to be in control of ourselves, making sure that that we go out there and play to the best of our ability. And we focus a lot on our response to all those situations. And when you're in the heat of battle, that can be challenging. There's a lot of ways that you can get distracted. But our guys, I think, have shown the maturity throughout this season, even though we're only four games into it, of being able to respond whenever adversity does strike. And that's something that you try to train 365 days a year to prepare them for. But it's good when it shows up on game day.
Right. Every game is critical, obviously. But you said after the game that, well, frankly, what you've been saying all week long, that it was a program-defining game. What did you see that made you say that before the game, and how would you describe the significance of that win?
Well, it has everything to do with really the opponent we're facing. I've got as much respect for the Naval Academy and their football program. Obviously, they're extremely well coached, but really not only how they play, but the type of players that are within their program you respect every aspect of what they do, and they're trained well, they're disciplined. Obviously the physicality and mindset of what they approach every day. So for our team to be in a tough situation there in the first half, for us to have to, we're down 20-7, and just to continue to fight, battle and claw to do everything in our power to put ourselves in a position to be successful, and to see us go out there and execute in the second half and to really take the game back over and to win it going away, that's what was impressive about the character of our young men and the maturity that they showed, and really just you're going out there and playing at a level that I knew we were capable of, and that's why I'm so proud of them.
Mike Norvell joining us. We're talking Memphis football. Mike, what about the other side, the defense? Now, it didn't necessarily reach the level you would have liked last season, so you brought in Adam Fuller to be your defensive coordinator this year. The defense has given up less than 16 points per game. So what did you see in Fuller that got you so excited, and how pleased have you been with the results so far?
I've been extremely pleased, and Adam is, I think, one of the top minds in college football. When I got a chance to know him, going through the process when I was looking to bring in a defensive coordinator, he really checked all the boxes. He's an aggressive mindset. He's a teacher of the game. Really prides himself on the fundamental aspects. But then on the flip side of it, he's a tremendous man when it comes to building relationships, and I think that you see the experience and the depth that we have on defense. That's taken time. We've recruited at a very high level. Our guys have developed, and they truly buy into what we're asking them to do. And we got a tremendous leader that puts them in the right positions to go out there and showcase their abilities. And so I've been really pleased with our guys through the first four games of the season. We know that the challenges are going to continue to get bigger as the season progresses, but I'm really excited about the opportunity that's in front of us.
Got a few more moments with Mike Norvell. Mike, you told Yahoo Sports that it's a much more mature football team than you've had before. What do you mean by that? And is that something you coach and teach, or is it something the players took upon themselves?
I think it's a little bit of both. We were extremely young last year. We only had eight seniors. Now we did lose a couple guys that declared early for the NFL draft. But it's been a process. And, our guys, they believe in the culture that's been established here within our program. And, we have an all-inclusive approach. We challenge them on the field, off the field, in the classroom, in every aspect of their lives, to prepare them for game day, and to see them go out there and develop the way that they've developed, to train the way that they train, and then to be able to handle themselves when they're in the heat of the battle. That's something that I think has been trained over time, but it also goes back to the players making a commitment that's what they're going to do, and how they're going to and how much they're going to believe in each other and the guys that they have lined up next to them. So I've been really pleased through four games. I think that maturity has definitely shown up, but we still have a lot in front of us.
Now, how about this? This is really interesting. I had Sonny Dykes from SMU on in the first hour. I had Willie Fritz from Tulane on the show last week. I had Rod Carey from Temple earlier in the season. I had Coach Ken. I had Josh Heupel before the season. What I'm saying is I'm talking a lot of American Athletic Conference football these days. How good is this conference, and how much tougher has it become in just the 4 years that you've been in Memphis?
I mean, I think it's incredible. And, you know, the names that you just rattled off, your tremendous respect for all those guys, and not only the football coaches they are, but the developer men that they are. You know, I think all those programs are definitely on the rise and playing a high, you know, high level of football. You know, you sit there and you go into the non-conference season and you want to see how your conference stacks up. And I think we performed extremely well, a lot of big wins in non-conference play. And, you know, just when you turn on film and watch the student athletes that are represented in this league, I mean, it's quite impressive. And so, you know, I'm looking forward to the continued growth of our league and with the coaches that you mentioned and what we're trying to do here in Memphis. I think the best days are in front of us.
So finally, if the conference has changed out dramatically in the last 4 years, how different are you as a head coach now than when you first took that job?
You know, I think I've grown in all aspects. You know, there's no manual for how to be a head coach, and you try to prepare. You know, when I was an offensive coordinator, I tried to always look at things as if I was the head coach and what I could do to help make the program better. But when you get put in the seat and have to go and every decision matters program wide, top to bottom. You know, it takes time, and you know, I think I've matured as a head coach in how I've gone through the process. You know, how you put together a staff, making sure that you're checking all the boxes that are necessary for your team to be successful. You know, I've had to hire 15 coaches in the last 2 years, and that's been something that I've had to grow in. And, you know, I've been excited about the guys that we have, but we're really excited about, you know, where our program's going and the recognition it's getting. So, you know, I think it's been growth across the board, and, you know, I'm continuing to work to get better, much as every player that we have on this team, and, you know, we're just going to continue to keep pushing.
I like that. Every decision matters, no doubt about that. He is in his fourth season with the Tigers. They're 4-0. They're coming off a huge win over Navy. They're number 23 in the coaches poll, and they've got Louisiana Monroe coming up next on Saturday. Mike Norvell, the head coach at Memphis. Mike, great to have you back. Thanks so much for that.
Thanks so much, and go Tigers.
Good night now!